Live Creative Now, episode 37.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hey, brilliant. This is Live Creative Now, the podcast designed to help you live a full-color life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind or anything in between, the truth is that no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive. And it's how you change the world. I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full-color creative life. Today, I want to share with you a conversation that I had with Lisa Robin Young, the singing coach. I am always interested, not surprisingly, in how people integrate their creative passions into their lives. You know, there's so many different ways to do this. And no one way is right for everybody. Anybody who calls herself the singing coach perks up my ears. So I knew that I had to bring Lisa onto the podcast. And we had a conversation a couple of months ago. Now, we didn't just touch on how she integrates her singing into her life, though. Our conversation kind of went all over the map. We talked about her earliest memories of singing, which were actually in her crib very early. We talked about the near-death experience that changed her life and the entrepreneurial type framework that she developed as a business coach and a whole lot more. So have a listen, and I think there's some pretty good gems in there. I hope you enjoy it. On with today's episode. Welcome, Lisa. It is such a pleasure to get a chance to talk with you. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, I am thrilled to be here. This is exciting.
So I know that you call yourself the singing coach, and that really intrigued me because I am, you know, all about bringing creative expression to the center of our lives. And I love that you have integrated your creative expression, or one of your, I don't know if you have many others, but one of your creative expressions into not just the center of your life, but the center of your business in a really unique and different way. And so I'm really interested in what, first of all, let me ask you, tell me about your history with your creative life, your history as a creative, and how you ended up becoming a singer and having that as a primary creative identity.
Yeah, my earliest memory, and it's very foggy. I was about a year old and I'm standing in my crib and it's bedtime and I'm rocking back and forth on the rail of the crib as my mother, like I'm insisting that my mother plays this Donnie and Marie tape. So this is, you know, 1976 and I'm singing and I won't go to sleep. And it's a really cloudy memory, but my mother reinforced it repeatedly. You and that Donnie and Marie, hey, you know. And so I remember being about 3 years old when we had moved to a new house and gathering all of the neighbor kids and putting on shows and singing and dancing. And my grandmother had this vision that I was going to be some kind of a Shirley Temple because I was a sassy, smart mouth little kid and I could sing and dance. And so that never happened. But the singing stayed with me. You know, singing is portable. You know that. You can take it, as long as you've got a voice, you can pretty much go anywhere with it. And so that's been the thing that stayed with me. When I went to university, I got my degree in music theory and music history with a minor in vocal performance. So music never really left me. But I don't know if you heard the 9-year-old hollering in the background. I've got 2 kids. One is now grown. And during the parental stage of my life, it was all of the voices from my childhood, from my parents, my grandparents, that whole, it's nice you want to be a singer, honey, but you're going to need something to fall back on. That whole thing, that fear just crushed me. And so all of the dreams about music and creativity kind of went in a box and they got set to the side. And I started working. I call myself the Dread Pirate Roberts. You know, I was learning anything anybody would teach me. graphic design. I worked in a construction facility. I was doing home repairs. I worked in a hardware store, did all kinds of stuff and fell into direct selling. And this was right about the time the internet was kind of coming into its fore. So I learned how to code and became, you know, one of those people who built one of the first ever e-commerce websites. So I'm like, how can I do this and like make money and feed the kid and, you know, that whole thing. And that led to, well, why don't you write a book? And so I did. And then that morphed into, why don't you coach me? And so I did. And so for 15 years, I had this very business-centric focus of either building my own business or helping other people learn how to build and grow their business. And a couple of years ago, I hit a wall and I felt like I had done kind of all I could do with this music thing, kind of, Lisa, don't forget about me, you know, that whole thing. And that was about the time I got into the car incident, which is where I'm driving on the freeway, the car spins out of control across several lanes of traffic. It's a dry day. There's no reason the car should have spun. And as my butt end hits the ditch, I see a Mack truck zoom right in front of me. And I'm like, I should probably be dead right now. I was not dead. And interestingly enough, I was on my way to my therapist's appointment at the time.
Oh, that's good timing.
Like, so tell me, what do you think this means for you? You know, in her very therapeutic way. And I'm like, well, if I'm supposed to be dead and I'm not dead, maybe this is a wake up call for me to be doing what I want to be doing, what I'm, you know, really feeling called to do. And that's where the 300 Songs Project came from. That's where stepping into a more full ownership of being a musician and a performing artist came. And yet I still had this passion for business. And it was like, hey, how do I put these two things together in a way that makes sense, that doesn't freak people out? Like, you're a singing business coach? Like, do you sing when you're coaching people? And so it's taken a little bit of audience education to kind of explain, no, I use music and I use storytelling and I use the performing arts as my vehicle to convey what I consider timeless principles on how to grow a profitable, sustainable business doing what you love. And that's a message that speaks right to the heart of creative entrepreneurs. And that kind of brings you up to speed on where I'm at now.
Oh, that is so cool. I love that. Do you, I have one question about the business coaching, mm-hmm. and then I have other questions. Do you primarily work with musicians?
No, actually, I primarily, my recent history, I've worked with a lot of best-selling authors. I find that in my experience, the musicians that I've come across are really gun-shy to work with a coach. I mean, they'll work with a vocal coach or they'll work with an instrumental coach because they've had private lessons and they understand that. But when you step forward and go, okay, your music is a product. You are a product. You are the single most important product that your company, your brand has to offer, and you need to treat it like a business. They start to freak out. They're like, what do you mean? I don't know how to, I just want to create the music, man. I just you know, let somebody else handle all that. That's been my personal experience. Now I know other people who've not had that experience working with musicians. So it could just be a function of my geography. But primarily, I've been working with personality-based brands, so authors, a couple of actors, small business owners, solopreneur types, basically anybody who is the face of their company, mm-hmm. those are the people that I'm working with.
Very cool. And you mentioned your book. I know you have a book called The Secret Watch. Is that the book that you're referring to?
No, the first book I ever wrote was called Home Party Solution. And it was a book for direct sellers about how to use the internet to grow their business.
Oh, okay, cool.
So it was an end-to-end, this is where you start, this is how you use a blog, this is how you set up your email, the whole nine yards. I mean, it's still out there somewhere. You can probably find it somewhere. But no, the book that I most recently wrote that kind of triggered this whole car incident, lifestyle changing thing, that was The Secret Watch.
Okay. And that's a novel?
That is a business parable. It was actually written for solopreneurs, small business owners, home-based micropreneurs. And it's a somewhat autobiographical tale of a graphic designer who goes to a conference hoping beyond all hope she's going to get all the clients that she needs because she's down to her last frequent flyer miles. You know the story of the starving artist business owner type. She doesn't really pan out at the conference, gets on a plane and is flying home. And as she's flying home, the woman sitting next to her in first class strikes up a conversation. And at the end of the conversation, gives her this pocket watch. It only opens once a day. And every day when it opens, it has a new inscription, magically and secretively. And each inscription is designed to help the owner of the watch define success on their terms. And so it's a really nice story. People are always saying, oh, I couldn't put it down. It's a pretty quick read, you know. But it's one of those heart-touching, tearjerker kind of stories that get you thinking about, what does success really look like for me? How do I define success? Because all the other definitions in the world don't mean a hill of beans. Your definition of success is what matters to you, and that's what you should be driving towards because that's why you're here. Period.
Absolutely. Yeah, my very first course that I ever created was a program called the Thriving Artist Project, and I interviewed dozens of creators, creatives, artists and creatives of all stripes on who were making a living from their creative thing. And I combined it with lessons and things. And the very first lesson was all about figuring out what your definition of success is, because, oh my goodness, we are bombarded by, you know, the societal definitions of success, the cultural definitions of success, you know, the fancy Mercedes and the big house and whatever. And if you go after those things, but they're not really going to feed you, then, you know, Stephen Covey had that beautiful metaphor of climbing the ladder to success only to discover that it was leaning up against the wrong wall. And that is the last thing we want. So yeah, absolutely.
There's this concept, and I can't remember what book I read it in, that it's better to fail at your own dharma than to succeed at someone else's.
Yes.
And that's really, you know, when I'm working with a client, that's the thing that I want them to get into their brain is that, you know what, who cares if you fail as long as you're going for what matters to you because you're laying the foundation. You know, you may look at it as a failure today in this moment, but that failure could open the door to something new that becomes the success you've always wanted it to be. And it's a really easy thing to say as a coach. It's another thing to have to actually live through it.
Oh, definitely.
Not that I speak from experience or anything, but yeah, I mean, that's the sooner we wrap our minds around each of us is unique. Each of us is here for our own specific journey. I won't say purpose because some people have a problem with that, but we all have our own journey. And there are going to be times when our journey is parallel or running in the same direction as someone else. And there's going to be times when we're off in the weeds by ourselves and our journey is ours. And it doesn't matter if your dream feels small or your dream feels big. If it's your dream, it's big, period. Because it's
Absolutely.
Your dream. That's all there is to it.
Absolutely. And the failure piece, I have my 10 rules for the creative sandbox, which are really a foundational piece of everything that I do. This metaphor of the creative sandbox is the place to experiment and play and make messes and not worry about the outcome. And I'm looking at my poster that I created that is taped up against the side of a bookshelf. You guys can't see, but I look at it all the time. And rule number 7 is take the riskier path.
And that came specifically from that place when, at the time, I was thinking in terms of painting, but it really applies in any creative field or any project that you're working on, really. You get to that place where you know it's not done. It needs something, but there's so much fear that you're going to ruin it. Yeah. So what happens? It sits in a drawer. It sits on a shelf for months and years or whatever. It becomes a UFO, an unfinished object, right? And my rule for myself, or my guidelines for myself, in order to get myself back creating, when my creative spirit was going, yoo-hoo, Melissa, just like yours, was, it wasn't nearly as condensed as take the riskier path. It was, when you get to that place and you can't decide which way or the other, do the thing that you're scared of. Do the thing you fear, because you know what's the worst that's going to happen. Yeah, you might ruin the piece, but you're going to learn something from ruining that piece. This is not brain surgery we're talking about here.
Right? No one is going to die.
Nobody is going to die. I'm not even talking about doing this on, say a client commissions me to do a piece of art and they have a specific thing that they're looking for at the end of it.
Right.
This is for specifically for creative sandbox sessions. You know, when you are in that creative sandbox, do the scary thing, do the thing you fear, take the riskier path. And how many times have I come up with something that as a result of ruining something ended up resolving that, you know, destruction or whatever, coming up with a better idea, a completely new direction for my work, a new style of working, a new technique, all kinds of wonderful, wonderful things emerge from that, you know, doing the thing you fear and risking failure.
Well, and I think too, we forget how many wonderful just inventions we've had in the world because somebody screwed up, you know?
Yes.
I have all over my
desk. Yes.
Sticky notes were a screw up and they were so awesome. Thank you for screwing up, because now we have sticky notes. And we're so afraid of screwing up because we see screwing up as this final fatal thing. Like, right. We screw up once, that means we're a screw up.
Exactly.
We take the failure personally. But if they hadn't said, hey, what can we do with this? It's not as sticky as we wanted it to be. It's like not even close. What can we do with this? If they hadn't done that and they just thrown it away, we'd still be using scotch tape.
That's right. Oh my gosh.
Can you imagine having scotch tape on that? Like, what? No, you wouldn't do it. And this is such, you know, there is genius hidden in our screw ups. There are these little gems of genius hidden in our screw ups. And again, I'm saying this as much for me as I am for your audience, because sometimes I forget that. And I need that reminder of no one's going to die. If this song sucks, it sucks. If this video falls flat, there's always next week. You know, there's always another opportunity to show up and put yourself fully and completely into what you're doing. And sometimes it works out great and sometimes it doesn't. And it's not my job as the creator to judge. It's my job to create.
Exactly.
So let's do it. Let's create.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Which creates a whole nother set of fears. That whole fear of the unknown and what are going to people think and what are we going to, yes. Whole new set of worms right there.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, your story about that incredibly traumatic near-death experience is really, really a dramatic story. And, you know, it's so, that's such an archetypal thing to happen, isn't it? That somebody has, you know, a massive crisis or a near-death experience or something, and it's that thing that finally shakes them out of whatever rut they've been in. I mean, that's my story as well. And that's how I got back to my creative side as well. You know, why do you think it is? I'm just curious. I don't know that anybody has an answer.
Do you have a scientific answer for
that? I like to assess, you know, I have my own theories about things, but Why do you think it? Do you think we have to have a major crisis like that or hit bottom in some way in order to allow ourselves to take a fresh start?
I think some of us can live vicariously through other people's experiences and circumvent having it ourselves. But I think most of us, and nobody wants to hear this, but I think most of us have to go through it, because here's what happens in our brains. I'm like an armchair neuroscientist, so you're going to have to bear with my pseudoscience for a moment. Our brains are hardwired to keep us safe and comfortable. The amygdala in the center of our brain is always looking for danger. And anything that's foreign, it registers as danger. So when we go, you know, I really want to get back into singing, the brain goes, wait a minute, you've been doing this coaching thing for like 10, 15 years. What do you mean you want to go to? No. We got to stay right here where it's comfortable. We know what to expect here. We're going to stay right here until everything falls apart and that space isn't safe anymore, or until we're acted on by an external force, like your car spinning out of control. And you're like, well, if I'm going to live, Lord, let me live. And if I'm not, then no, whatever. Until we have that switch flip so that our brain says, okay, it's not safe here anymore. We've got to go do something else. We're going to stay comfortable. Yep. Now, the vicarious thing aside, because I do believe there are some people who will hear this story and go, whoa, I don't want that to happen to me. That was the wake-up call I needed. I'm going to go live my dream. I think there are people like that in the world. But I also think there are some of us who are going, I don't want to have a near-death experience. I don't want to have to get to that point. What can I do now? And my suggestion, although I know how the brain works, so it's not likely you're going to take me up on it, but here it is anyways. My suggestion is to start taking the small risks. Do the small things now. I call it slipping in under the radar, because we have a threshold of belief. It's like a thermostat in our beings that says, I'm capable of this. Yeah. And I do this when I'm doing talks with people. I'll start really ridiculous. How many of you think you can earn a penny a day? And everybody's like, oh, yeah, that's no problem. I'm like, well, you know, in some third world countries, they don't. How many of you think you can make a dollar a day? You know, and we just go through this whole threshold of belief. And I just keep upping the ante until I hit a number somewhere between 30,000 and 300,000, where most of the hands in the room start dropping. They're like, yeah, I don't think I can make that. And I'm like, there's your threshold of belief. And until you believe it's possible for you to hit that number, whatever it is, you're going to be really hard pressed to ever hit it.
Yep.
How do you bridge the gap? How do you go from, I know I can make 30,000 to I know I can make 300,000. Most people can't just flip the switch. They have to go, I can probably make 35. And then they have to actually do it and go, I can do that. I could probably make 45. And then they have to do that. And then they're convinced. We have this file clerk in our head that keeps track. He doesn't judge. He just keeps track. You're the one who does the judging. Your brain just says, I have this piece of paper that says I can sing really well. And I have this thing that says I can't sing at all. And he files it. And then when you've got an opportunity, like I did, to go audition for The Voice, your brain says, bring me the two files that say I can sing and I can't sing. And the big file that says you can't, whomp, goes down on the desk. And the one that says you can is like, whoa, 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 whoa. You know? Yeah, maybe I won't audition after all. Now, I'm lucky. Those two files are reversed for me, so I went and I auditioned. I didn't make the cut, but I learned a lot. I had a great time. And that's why you see some of those really, really bad singers auditioning for shows and things, because they've got a file system that says they're amazing singers, they're fantastic, and everybody loves them, even if it's not true. That's how our brains work. And so the only way that we can change the programming is to slip under the radar one piece of paper at a time. Because I've learned you can't get rid of this file. It's always going to be the size it is. All you can do is stop putting new data in it and start filling up the other file. So when you have an experience, you need to reinforce the validation of, that just proves I can do this. That just proves I'm good at this. That just proves I can sing. Whatever it is you're trying to validate, so that when your brain goes back and says, should I move to California and pursue my dream of being an actor? Pull out the two file folders. Let's go do it, you know? But you'll stay stuck if you keep judging in the negative the thing that you most want to see happen. So yeah, it can be done, but most people won't do it by themselves.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I absolutely love that metaphor of the two file folders. Why do you think it is that probably most of us have the big, for us, the bigger file folder is, no, I can't do the thing. And the smaller file folder is, yes, you can do the thing. Whereas for some people, that's reversed. Why those people, like I look at those people, I actually don't watch TV, so I haven't seen them, but I know of the people who audition for The Voice or whatever. And, you know, they have no sense of pitch. They have no sense of rhythm, whatever. And they really can't sing well.
And you're like, why in the name of all things holy did you audition?
Yeah. And some of these people, I don't even know how they got there, because supposedly they've been studying for so many years and did they have teachers that lied to them or didn't
they might have.
Them, or didn't teach them good practice techniques, or, you know, what, why do you think some people have that reversed?
I think there's a couple of things at play there. Again, we judge and we determine for ourselves what each experience in our life represents. So a lot of us go through the world, and I keep this by my desk, and it's Marianne Williamson's quote, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate, it's that we're powerful beyond measure. It is so much easier for us to just assume we can't than to put the effort in to try. So when something comes up and we go, oh, there's an opportunity, and, you know, if I do that, then there's this risk. And like, perfect example. This was my second audition this year for The Voice. And I went last year, and I was like, I'm not going to do this again. And I had my laundry list of reasons. And I had a friend who said, they're coming to Detroit. That's like an hour from you. You can't not go. And I'm like, yeah, but if I go, my husband's got this thing, and I got to figure out what to do with the kid. And, you know, another laundry list of reasons. And I was like, wait a minute. But if I don't go, it was so much easier for me to just go, yeah, I'm not going to, I've done it, you know, whatever. But then I was like, but what would it really take for me to just show up and do my best? Because that's all, I can't compete with everybody else in the room. They're either going to like what I do or they're not. I have to compete with me. And so what's it really going to take? I got to arrange for my kid to have somebody to look after. My husband volunteered to rearrange his schedule. I'm like, really? He's like, go do it. Go do it. I'm like, okay, I don't really have an excuse now other than I got to stand in a long line and, you know, wait around all day. And okay, I guess. And while I'm there, I'm making friends and having great conversations. And it, the brain, again, goes to the easy place. The easy place is don't waste your time. You're not going to get cast anyways. Don't bother. You're not going to get anything new out of this. You can't do that. And then you've got all of the conditioning and programming that you bring like baggage through your whole life. So if you had a family that said, it's really nice that you want to be a rock star, honey, but you really need a fallback plan. That comes with you. That doesn't go away magically. You have to do work to overcome or put those voices in their appropriate place. I've never really seen anybody who totally got rid of them, but they've learned how to put them in their place. And so all that baggage comes with you, and you've got the file clerk in your head, and then you've got, and the file clerk in your head is based on the judgments that you make. So that question of why did this singer who clearly can't sing, who's had years of lessons, first of all, you and I both know, you can spend lots of money on lessons and never learn a thing. Because there are people who will pay just for the experience of saying they had the lesson and never see progress. I personally choose to stop working with those people, but there are people who will gladly take other people's money just to take it. And they will go into a lesson. A student will go into a lesson. I paid my money. And my coach said, this one little piece was great, but everything else needed to be worked on. The only thing he heard was that little spot was great.
But that's the thing I'm curious about. I really would like to know, because I'm wondering if there's something that those of us who have the, you know, have a bias towards the I'm not good enough, which I think is most of us, certainly me. Is there something we can glean from those people who have that strange reversal of that bias, where instead of focusing on the negativity, where most of us have the negativity bias, they focus on the positivity?
Well, I think you're running into your creative entrepreneur style bias.
Because
as we talked and you took the quiz that I created, you're a fusion type. And fusion.
Let me back up for a second. I want to ask you about this because nobody listening is going to know what this is.
That's right.
So Lisa mentioned in an online group that we are in that she had a survey, like a beta survey for this creative entrepreneur style framework that mm-hmm. she created. And asked for volunteers. And I was like, ooh, I love taking those kinds of things. So I filled out the survey and how many questions does it have?
There are 19 questions.
19 questions, some of which were rather surprising to me that, you know, about like, one of them was what kind of physical type you are, which was very intriguing to me. And then output what creative entrepreneur style type I was, and I came out as a fusion type, and there are three types. Is that right?
There are three types. There's the chaotic creative. Those are the people who tend to go with the flow and just kind of let life happen. And they're, you know, really open to the experience, not a lot of structure. Then there are the linears, which are on the other end of the spectrum. They're very regimented and structured, and they like processes and systems, and they're very strategic. And then there are the fusions like you and I, which comfortably live in the middle between these two extremes. We are a fairly equal mix of the two. One of the biggest issues that fusions face is perfectionism. Because we know people who are more linear than we are, and we know people who are more chaotic than we are. So we always think that we're not good enough compared to these two extremes. So I think you're dealing a little bit with your bias there, because the way this manifests for the other types is a chaotic will be, how do I say this? I don't want to say neurotic, but they'll be neurotic about the vision. The thing that they're trying to create has to measure up in this particular way. A linear will want the thing that they're trying to create to produce a particular kind of result. If it doesn't produce the result, then there's a stress around that. If, on the other end of the spectrum, the vision doesn't come out the way they want it to for the chaotic, then they panic. We live in the middle going, it's just got to be perfect or we can't handle it. Because we know what the pinnacle of linear is and we know what the pinnacle of chaotic is. And that's why one of the questions in the quiz is, you know, in a social setting, how do you interact? And for most fusions, it's like, well, depends on the group I'm in, because in some groups I'm the creative weirdo and in other groups I'm like the really super smart one. I'm like the nerdy, geeky, smart one. And it depends on the group that I'm in. Whereas chaotics tend to stay with chaotic people because they drive linears nuts. And linears tend to stay with linears because they drive chaotics nuts. And we have a blessing and a curse because we can say we bridge the gap so nicely. We can translate, okay, linear, this is what your chaotic friend is trying to tell you. Mm-hmm. Okay, chaotic, this is what your linear friend is trying to get you to see. And we're the one that everybody likes because we understand. We get along well with lots of different peer group types, and we know a lot of different things. We know enough to be dangerous in a lot of the problem with that is we end up becoming a one-man show a lot longer than we need to, because we think in our infinite wisdom that it's easier and faster for us to just do it ourselves, because it's going to take time I'm going to have to slow down to teach somebody else.
Oh my God. So true.
The linears don't have that problem. Linears are like delegate, delegate, delegate. Let's get results. Let's go. And the chaotics, they're like, if you're on board with my vision, then we can talk. But you know, I get final approval. Everything has to pass through me. So they end up being a bottleneck in a different way, because they need to trust people who will bring their vision the way they want to. I like to point to Lady Gaga, who's probably more of a fusion type, but she leans heavy when she's creating her shows into that chaotic realm. And so she's got people who manage the money and the numbers and all of that stuff so that she can have her vision of her show and her costumes and everything exactly the way she wants it. And if it's not the way she wants it, she's not happy. Whereas, you know, a more linear, like maybe the Eagles, they're like, let's just get the results. Let's just get the band on the stage. Let's get the music done. You know, let's have a good time and then let's go deal with other things.
So Lisa, This is really interesting to me. That what I'm most interested in is, how did you come up with this framework? And how did you come up with the survey to help you determine which type people would be?
Yeah, 20 years of working as and with entrepreneurs gave me a deeper understanding. Because when I first started thinking that this might actually be a thing, like, maybe there are different types, and I wonder how that works. I thought there were two types, chaotics and linears. Left brain, right brain, you know, that's what I thought it was going to be. And it turns out in my research that the left and right brain concept has actually been debunked. It's more of a...
Right, it's a metaphor.
You know, but it's a metaphorical concept of this linear style and this chaotic style. And so I thought that's what it was. But as I was looking at, okay, so what would make a chaotic be chaotic? And what would make a linear be linear? I'm sitting there going, I do not fit well in either one of the, and this is something that I've had several people say as they've been beta testing. It's like, some of these questions, I could have answered all of them. You know, I could have picked them all. And it's like, you're probably a fusion type. You probably are. And so I'm like, okay, I guess there are three types. And so let me test this theory. Let me go back through my client logs. Let me go back through all of the coaching calls and the interviews. And before I started coaching and working with personality-based brands, I spent a lot of time interviewing for a client that I was with. He had a year-long coaching program, and we did weekly interviews with authors, business owners, whatever. And so I went back through all of the audio archives, and I'm like, listening for the cues. You know, how do I know, how can I be really sure that that person is a linear? And it was, these patterns started emerging. Linears in general are very good at spotting patterns because they look for, they're strategic, they're results oriented. And so I started just kind of meshing out, you know, these are the characteristics and traits of these kinds of people. These are the characteristics and traits of these kinds of people. And then there's really the two spectrums, and fusions fall in the middle. Now you can be on the cusp, you know, leaning a little more toward linear, but still be a fusion, lean a little more toward chaotic, but still be a fusion. And that's the neat thing about this assessment, because there are very few people in the world who are purely chaotic, or purely linear. You know, it's a spectrum.
Right.
And what I found, and this is the part that really surprised me, there are a lot of people who have a preference for the chaotic style, but were forced into learning how to do the linear stuff. I had a great chat with a woman who was a translator. She worked as a translator. She grew up in this teeny tiny little rural town in Germany and wanted to be a dancer, Latin dance of all things. But they didn't have anything like that where she lived. So she picked up languages pretty well. And so she started translating and moved into corporate, and she started designing systems and structures to help these teams work together in these different languages. And she got really good at it, but she hated it.
Yeah.
Because it's so deviant from what her natural preference for behaving and being in the world was. And so when she took the quiz, she wasn't sure. She's like, well, I don't know. I'm not sure it's accurate. And as we talked, she started talking about dancing. And she said, what I love about dancing is that I don't like taking classes, because I don't want to have to learn the steps and get the structures and the systems and all that. Like it messes with my brain. I just want to go with the flow and let my body move. And when I dance with a partner, I just let him lead and I follow, and it's great. There's no having to learn stuff. I just let my body go. And I'm like, you're clearly a chaotic. And she's like, sure. And I'm like, do you like making those structures? Do you like building those systems? She's like, no, but I got good at it. And I'm like, that's my point. This isn't about whether or not you can do those things. It's about
right.
Preference lies.
And so once you know that, once you know where your preference lies, how is this useful for people?
As an entrepreneur, we hit roadblocks. It's just a natural part of business development. Something is going to come along and put a block in your path. There are certain blocks that are typical to the styles. For example, your chaotic types tend to not want to have to deal with anything linear. If it's money, accounting, structures, calendars, any of that kind of stuff, they prefer to not have to deal with it. Well, the problem for a creative artist who wants to spend all of their time creating, and I have a colleague who's facing this right now, she needs to do more billable hours. So you've got a chaotic who doesn't want to deal with any of the linear stuff. And I've got a client, a colleague right now who is a creative director. She's an amazing designer. She wants to do the billable hours and do the billable work, but she's not billing. And she doesn't want to have to deal with the customer service issues that come along with, why didn't you pay the bill on time? What do you mean? How many hours did this take? She doesn't want to do any of that. So she's not billing and she's not bringing in money. The other side of the coin, you have these linears who are very results oriented. They want to get the thing done. And so, for lack of a better word, sometimes their stuff just doesn't have any finesse. And they need that creative spark, that out of the box approach to their offering to get people to understand why their choice is more than just the logical choice. It's the right choice. It's the emotionally sound choice for their audience. And that's true whether it's music or it's art or it's a book. A lot of linears tend to be thought leaders. And so they stand in their expertise and they're like, well, of course you should listen to me because I know what I'm talking about and I've done all of this research and I've got all of the statistics to back me up. But nobody's listening to them because they're not catching the attention. They're not as...
So how does them...
They're not being fascinating.
So how does knowing what your creative entrepreneur style type, how does that help?
By identifying your type, you can come to terms with what the typical roadblocks are and then be able to incorporate those ideas in ways that don't drive you nuts. Because if you're a linear, hiring a chaotic to come on board and solve your marketing problems is going to create a war inside your organization. Because you're going to be like, I do not get this person. They just will not stop talking about rainbows and unicorns. And I just, you know. And on the other side, when you know you need someone who can handle the billing, let's say, if you bring a linear on who's totally numbers driven and they're on the far end of the spectrum, they're going to say, you're spending too much time doing this. You're spending too much money doing this. You need to cut back. And they're going to be like, look, I got a process, yo. Leave me be. Let me create. You got to figure that out on your own. And so you've got this war. Again, this is the blessing and the curse of diffusion because we sit in the middle and we can help both sides, but we only make good employees for so long because we know we can do it better than they can. So we got to go out and get it done and work for ourselves and have that peace of mind. So you identify the bottlenecks and then you can learn how to bring those elements in a way that works for you at a speed that works for you. So you're getting over those roadblocks and smoothing things out so that your success journey is an easier road to navigate. I mean, you're always going to have bumps and potholes, but if you can make it easier for yourself and identify, yeah, there's that trigger coming up for me again, it becomes almost a self-coaching tool because you can identify the roadblocks yourself and say, okay, this is what I need to solve that problem. Now I can go look for it in a way that works for me.
Yeah, so it's basically shining a light on the areas of sort of unconscious weakness, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. I like that. I'm going to use that. I'm stealing it.
You are very welcome to it.
Thank you.
Well, that's really cool. What I want to get back to, though, Lisa, before we wrap up, is the thing that I'm most interested in is, well, like my purpose on this planet is really to get people doing their art and sharing their work because, of course, creative expression is, you know, the fastest route to happiness and self-fulfillment, and it is how we change the world. And what so many people really struggle with is figuring out how to integrate their creative thing into their lives. I know I really struggled with the idea that I need to either do this thing full time as my sole source of income, or I don't get to have it. That was kind of like my unconscious self-installed glass ceiling, you know, belief system about it, which of course is bunk. It's totally not true, but there's so many different ways to integrate the creative things that we love into our 21st century, you know, Western culture lives. Yeah. There are people who do their creative thing as their full-time gig, which means that they spend probably most of their time on business and marketing for that creative thing. And there are people who don't earn a penny from their creative thing, but it feeds them. Like my husband, he's a writer. He writes on the weekends. That's what he does on the weekends. And during the week, he's got a 9-to-5. And that works really well for him. And, you know, then there are those of us who are somewhere in between. So I'm really curious how you, in your day-to-day life, how your creative passion, your music fits into your world, how you bring that in and how you make it, continually make it part of your life and bring it to the center.
Sure. One of the things, and I said this earlier, singing is very portable. So I'm very blessed that I can pretty much go anywhere, anytime. We were at the store earlier and I started singing and my son's like, "You're singing in the store. You can't do that." I'm like, "Oh yes, I can. I can't sing loud, but I'm going to sing, you know?" And so I have an art form that is very portable and easy to port. So that's one thing that's in my favor, but right behind me is my keyboard. And so it's always nearby when I'm at home. And I make discs, backup discs for myself, and I pop them in the car and I can sing along to my discs when I'm in the car. So I found ways to make my art accessible, even in the stolen pockets. You know, I'll have a couple of MP3s on my phone so that if I'm in my room or I'm somewhere where I can't play a CD, I've got something to keep me going. I've also done as much as I can to pare down and say no to the things that aren't giving me the space. Boom. They're not giving me the space to be me. Now, whether being me today means singing or being me today means coaching or being me right now in this moment is this interview with you and your lovely audience, I had to really sit down, and I do this regularly now, and get clear. What am I really driving toward? I know, you know, Tara Gentile, and she talks about this chief initiative in your business, but I talk about the five key areas of success: faith, family, fitness, fortune, and freedom. And they're in the book. And you have to know what success is in each of those things. And then you've got to drive toward them relentlessly. Because if you're not doing it for you, why should anybody else? And so for me, it was, you know, that Toastmasters group, I get where they're going and I think they're awesome and I'd really love to do more with them. But if it's between choosing to do that and spending time during the summer with my son, I'm spending time with my son because that's important for me. Right now in this moment, he's in the other room because this is important for me. And so it's making those choices in the moment. And here's the thing that I think is really crucial for people to understand. You have to be willing to find your own groove, your own tempo, and you have to be willing for it to be okay that it doesn't match anybody else's. Because as you pointed out so aptly, Melissa, we have this paradigm that has been handed down for generations during the industrial era that says you have one job and you do it for 35 years and you get your watch and you get the hell out. Pardon my language. But that paradigm has broken down over the last 25 years, and going to college isn't what it used to be. You know, there are some career paths where it's still very necessary and it's still very important. But for the vast majority of human beings, I told my teenager, he's 18. I said, you don't need college, not for what you want to do. Don't waste the money. Invest it somewhere that's going to be useful for what you want to do with your life. And we're seeing more of that. There's less loyalty to one true path. You know, we have to be loyal to ourselves, and that is going to be messy and awkward sometimes. And we have to be willing to screw up. Right back to the beginning of the conversation we had. We have to be willing to stand there and go, this is a mess. And I don't know how long it's going to take for me to figure it out, but I'm going to knit all the pieces of my mess together and make the body of art that is me and my life. And it's going to take as long as it takes. And it's going to be as beautiful as I allow myself to make it. And you just have to be willing to feel your way through it, because my tempo, my brand of success, the way I go about fitting in little bits of art and music here and there and coaching and filming videos. I mean, I got my cameras and my lights and all that stuff sitting right here. Do you think I turned them all on for this? No, I didn't even think about it. You know, it's finding the time that works for you. And if it's 15 minutes here and 3 days over there and a weekend retreat over there and the rest of the year you're working like a dog at your day job, then you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you got to be okay with it. That's the hardest part, because we're always shooting on ourselves about, it should look like this. Why isn't it like this? It's supposed to be this. No, it is the way it is. And the sooner you drop the judgment and just accept what's there and use what you've got for all that it's worth, that's when the door opens to more.
Yeah, definitely.
So until you've got what you've got and you use it to its fullest, yeah, it's going to be, you're going to be hard pressed to get more.
Yeah. I do a lot of similar, what you were talking about with your portable art, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. I call it creating in the nooks and crannies. And exactly. Like I have a dedicated workspace that you can see behind me if you're watching the video, where I can, at any moment, I can turn around and add some color to a piece or make a mark or something. And there, you know, sometimes days go by where that's all I do is just little tiny bits and snatches here and there. I also believe that, you know, well, first of all, there's no such thing as time management. All time management is really priorities management.
There it is, right there.
And it's exactly what you were just talking about, is prioritizing. I call it doing triage. we hate prioritizing. Nobody likes to prioritize. We want it all and we want it all now, right? Yeah. But we have to. And that doesn't mean saying no to something necessarily forever. It just means saying no, not right now, right? Like, no, son, I don't get to play with you right now because I'm in an interview, but yeah, I can play with you later, right?
Right.
So, but I'm curious, do you also have time? Do you make regular time for your music as well? Or is it always just kind of where you can fit it in?
No, I have regular sessions in my schedule. Piano lesson today. And, you know, it's my lesson. I pull the book off the shelf. I set it down. I start playing, you know, voice lesson today. And I pull the book off the shelf and I run through it. You know, I do a video every week for Creative Freedom. And invariably, there's some singing involved in that. So, you know, I have a scheduled video shoot time and a video editing time. And so I have these chunks of time that are dedicated to creativity. But I've also learned how to create lots of white space, because
especially
the 9-year-old, during the summer when he's off school, stuff happens. You've got to be able to give yourself some breathing room, some white space. And that's another thing that I see creatives do a lot, is overbook themselves.
Absolutely.
I don't want to miss an opportunity. That's the chaotic side, versus I got to get lots of stuff done, which is the linear side. And then Fusion's in the middle. We're like, I don't want to miss anything and I want to get a lot of stuff done. And so we end up way over scheduling. And so that priority management says, you know, these are my 5 goals. This is what I'm driving toward. Where can I keep the space to be able to continue to serve? Because something may have to move.
That's brilliant.
It's a balancing act. I say, you know, life balance doesn't look like the scales of justice equally weighted on both sides. It's more like this, you know, origami contortionist thing where you're like standing over here and you got a plate on your shoulder and, you know, it's balance, but it's different for everybody.
Yeah. But what I love about what you shared is that you schedule in your creative time, your piano lessons or your singing lessons or whatever for yourself, not just for students. That's something that I learned a number of years ago as well, that, I can actually block time off on my calendar. I do not have to be available for other people 24/7. Yeah. I can choose when I'm available for other people and when I'm available for me, for my creative stuff, for what I call chill time, or, you know, white space and margins.
Yeah.
If you don't plan those into your day, guess what?
They don't happen. They don't happen. And then other people come in and go, well, you're not busy.
Right.
Can you help me with this? It's like, whoa. Let me draw some boundaries here. And you got to stay on the outside of them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is really cool, Lisa. What I want to ask you now is, what's next for you? What do you have on the horizon? What are you excited about?
Wow. Couple of projects. One, we're finishing up the book Creative Freedom that goes along with this creative entrepreneurial type quiz. So that will hopefully be out this fall. And we're finishing up this month and next, the new album. This will actually be my third album. It's the first one from the 300 Signs Project. It's called The Fine Line. And, that's coming out soon. I don't have any more details yet, other than it's music that's about that thin line between the American dream and the American nightmare. It's a quote from Don Henley. And so all of the songs, you can kind of take them either way. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? I'm not sure. And most of them are in the pop-infused jazz and blues style, which is what I love. So still.
Cool.
The big projects right now.
Lots of fun creative stuff going on. And where can people find you?
The easiest place to find me is at my website, lisarobinyoung.com. Robin has two B's. If you type it wrong, you'll miss it. And then you can find me at Lisa Robin Young on almost every social media platform, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. That's me. You'll find me. You'll see my pretty little face, my happy little picture. And just say hi, because I love to talk to people.
Yay. I have to say, I'm envious of people who have short enough names that they can have their name as as their idea, because I don't.
Right?
Makes it very easy.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Lisa, it has been such fun to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining.
Oh, thanks for having me. This has just been a blast. I hope we can do it again sometime.
I would love it. Thank you.
That's it. That's our wrap. If you are getting value out of this podcast, the best way to thank me is to tell your friends and go over to iTunes and leave a 5-star rating and review. Norsaj left a review saying, I happened upon this podcast while I was stuck in an almost 10-year creative quagmire. Melissa's podcast was just what I needed at just the right time. Listening to her helped me get out of my creative rut and provided me with the tools to not only get creating, but to explore different creative possibilities. I highly recommend this podcast to anyone who finds it hard to just produce work, or even to those who are unsure what direction they want to take creatively. Very well produced and always full of helpful and interesting information. Oh, thank you, Norsaj. That makes me so happy that I helped you get out of an almost 10-year creative quagmire. I've been in my own decades-long creative quagmires, and that's why I'm so passionate about helping other people out of theirs. You can leave your own review over on iTunes as well, and I might just read it on a future episode. You never know. And meanwhile, if you are in a creative quagmire yourself, I wanted to give you a heads up that next week I'm going to be opening the doors to something really special that will really, really help Creative Sandbox 101. It's my week-long signature mini course that has changed over 1,000 people's lives at this point. It's the mini course that packs the really powerful big punch. So stay tuned for that. And be sure to sign up on my mailing list at livecreativenow.com so that you get first dibs when I open the doors. Thanks again for joining me, and until next time, go get creating. Mwah. Live creative now. Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.